Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. One of my favorite political analysts, Ron Brownstein, is here and ready to go, and we'll talk to him in just a minute. Now, the election is just 11 days away, and it doesn't look like the twin scares are doing it for John McCain. The endgame message of the McCain campaign appears to be about socialism and terrorism. Joe the Plumber versus William Ayers as stand-ins for McCain and Obama, and it is definitely not over. But today's Washington Post says, quote, the batch of battleground state polls released yesterday brought almost universally bad news for McCain. The depth of their challenge was made plain by eight surveys produced by the Big Ten Battleground poll. Obama not only leads in all eight Midwestern states by hefty margins, but has improved his standing since the last time the group surveyed these states. Listen to these startling numbers. The Washington Post calls them startling. Obama leads by 12 points in Ohio, 11 in Pennsylvania, 13 in Wisconsin. In Indiana, a strong red state, Obama leads by 10, larger than in other recent polls. Quinnipiac University also released polls yesterday, says the Post. In these surveys, Obama's lead in Pennsylvania is 13 points. In Ohio, which is a must-win for McCain, Obama's lead is 14 points. Funny thing is, though, I don't know any Obama supporters who are confident. And there certainly are some potential paths to victory for John McCain. So let's talk about where things stand with Ron Brownstein, political director for Atlantic Media, which includes The Atlantic Magazine and National Journal. He's one of the most precise and insightful political analysts this country has. He also has a cover story in National Journal now called The Hidden Story of the American Electorate. Hi, Ron. Thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC. First, on these polls from Midwestern battleground states, should Obama supporters start counting their chickens?
No, these polls are a little euphoric. You know, there seems to be a phenomenon, for whatever reason, my colleague here, Mark Blumenthal at pollster.com, has noted that these university-run polls, which tend to use student interviewers, for whatever reason, seem to produce wider margins. I mean, the idea that Barack Obama is really going to win Ohio by double digits seems a little incredible. Now, that doesn't really change the fundamental dynamic, though, which is that both from a national point of view and from an electoral college point of view, he is in a very strong position in which all of his assets seem to be kind of, you know, reaching a crescendo. I mean, the financial asset, the advantage on television. I was out in Florida over the weekend with hundreds of thousands of volunteers who are canvassing around the country and making phone calls, and also the national climate. You know, we are ending this race pretty much where we started it, where we have overwhelming dissatisfaction with the direction of the country, overwhelming discontent with President Bush's performance, somewhere between 66 and 70% of Americans saying they disapprove of President Bush, and about two-thirds of those people who disapprove of him voting for Barack Obama.
Right.
I mean, when you get back to it, it really comes down to something that simple. When voters aren't happy with the party in power, their instinct is to vote for the other party, the party out of power. Obama's challenge was to make himself acceptable to voters who were ready for change, and he has done a very good job of that over the last month, Brian. That is, I mean, when you look at polling, for example, we put out, you know, because there aren't enough polls out there, our own all-state National Journal polls yesterday in Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, three blue states that McCain had targeted. In all of them, Obama was now running even with McCain on what had been McCain's core advantage, which one of these men is better prepared to be president. And Obama now led McCain in all of those states substantially on the other dimension, which is which one of these two candidates do you think has a better temperament to be president? And I think the last month has allowed Obama to seem presidential to many Americans. And for McCain, I think that judgment hasn't been quite as positive.
Yeah. Now, looking at the national polls after those state-by-state ones, today's CBS News New York Times poll, which is also good for Obama on the national level. And let me go through some of these numbers and ask you about the specifics. First of all, there is almost no essential gender gap. Obama leads among women 52 to 36, among men 52 to 39. He's tied with McCain among white men and has a 3-point lead among white women. He's winning the suburbs by 10 points. He's ahead among Catholics by 30 points, and he leads in the West by 23. Sarah Palin seems to be a drag on the McCain ticket with 30% favorable but 40% unfavorable. favorable ratings. The only groups who Obama is losing with in this poll are white men over 45, weekly churchgoers, white Protestants, and by just a few points, white married women. Are there historic changes in those numbers?
Yes, although I don't think we will see, again, numbers quite that euphoric. You know, we basically have two bands of polls right now. We have one that are somewhere in the range of 5 to 7 point national lead for Obama, and we have others. We had a Pew poll that was double digits. We have this CBS New York Times, it's double digits. We have the NBC Wall Street Journal at 10, and we have the Post ABC Track, which is at 10. Whereas we have, like, Gallup, we have our Diageo hotline poll that we do, Rasmussen, more in the range of 5 to 7. The big difference between these two groups of polls is how many new voters they assume will show up. You know, right now, the Post did us a service this week by publishing an interesting number, and they're also doing a tracking poll because, you know, Brian, there are only five others that were out there before this week, so we clearly needed a sixth.
Definitely.
Every day.
Definitely.
But they pointed out that in their first day of the track, they pointed out that Obama was running slightly ahead of McCain among people who had voted before, and it led by 46 points among first-time voters. In our polling, same thing, very similar, 40 points ahead among first-time voters. So, you know, a lot of the difference in the polls is how many of these first-time voters does your likely voter model assume will show up? Now, to go to your underlying question, I think we will see changes, maybe not of the magnitude, again, in that CBS New York Times poll, but I think we will see changes, as always in American politics, that are an evolution, a continuation of trends that we have seen. First of all, just on a narrow point, in the last five elections, as I point out in that story, The Hidden History of the American Electorate, in the last five elections, the Democratic vote among white men, according to the exit poll, has varied only between 36% and 38%. That's been the total variation, regardless of who the candidate is or what the circumstances is. If Barack Obama really is going to get into the mid-40s among white men, that would be a tremendous breakthrough for Democrats. I'm not sure we're going to see it. I think more likely what we're going to see is Obama putting together 35 years later, the coalition that George McGovern envisioned with one big question mark at the end. He's going to do very well among young voters. He's going to do very well among Hispanics. He's going to go up at least probably about 10 points from what Kerry did. He's also going to go up about 6 or 7 or 8 points among African Americans. People don't focus on that. John Kerry got 88% of black voters. And he's also going to do historically well among whites with a college education. We talked about this, you and I, for over a year.
Right.
These kind of upper middle class professionals. The last piece in the puzzle for him is how well can he do among those downscale blue-collar whites, non-college white voters. You know, they resisted in the primary. Hillary Clinton beat him among those voters 2-1 in the Democratic primary. John Kerry only won. For all the Democratic focus on being the tribune of the working class, John Kerry won 38% of white voters without a college education. He did better. We're seeing this class inversion now in the last few elections where Democrats, for the first time in the history of modern polling, are running better among college-educated whites than non-college, working-class whites. It had never happened except with McGovern until 2000, and now the last two elections we've seen it. I bet we see it again. And the big issue here, why is John McCain talking about Joe the Plumber? Because his last, I think, chance here is pushing the Obama number down among those working class whites. I mean, that's the one piece that's still a little loose here.
So I want to play a couple of clips before you go, because I mentioned the end game of the McCain campaign, and you just came back to it, and it's all about socialism and terrorism, portraying Obama as cozy with each. And what strikes me is that for all the ways which John McCain is a really different kind of Republican than, say, George Bush, this is the most traditional of Republican campaign strategies.
Absolutely right.
That the Democrat is a socialist, is weak, and hates America. Here, for example, is Sarah Palin in a campaign stop last week dismissing entire parts of the country that might vote for Obama as anti-American.
We believe that the best of America is in these small towns that we get to visit and in these wonderful little pockets of what I call real America, being here with all of you, hardworking, very patriotic, very pro-America areas of this great nation.
So they did it with Kerry and even Max Cleland in 2004. They've done it with Dukakis and Mondale and Clinton. She's talking about, you know, the parts of the country that love America. So is this just classical by-the-book GOP campaigning?
Yeah, I mean, and as you say, it's pretty ironic that John McCain ends up running kind of a very polarizing message at the end, both on cultural grounds, you know, that there are pro and anti-American parts of the country, and then calling Obama a socialist or, you know, suggesting that he, you know, his agenda is socialism. The problem with that message is that it's inherently self-limiting. I mean, it's sort of, it was very reminiscent of Bob Dole, you know, running around the last few weeks saying, "Wake up, America," about Bill Clinton. It reinforces, it excites the base, and it perhaps helps you narrow the overall number, and maybe even, you know, protect some Republican, help some Republicans in red states by generating more turnout, because you're basically telling the base of the party what they deeply do believe, right, that, you know, that Obama is offering socialism, and there are parts of the country, of which you are probably in the capital of, that are, you know, see, that they see as un-American. The problem is, it's a message that virtually guarantees you cannot reach the swing voters that would provide the last few points you would need to actually overcome. So if he really stays on this track, it virtually assures that he cannot get there, even as it might help him avoid the kind of double-digit numbers that something like the New York Times poll.
I want to play what was apparently Colin Powell's response to that Sarah Palin clip, because the Palin clip is about a week old and got a lot of air at that time. And then Powell went on Meet the Press, and when he endorsed Obama, this part didn't get much pickup. But I thought it was fascinating in that he was talking back directly to Sarah Palin there. Let's listen.
On the Republican side, over the last 7 weeks, the approach of the Republican Party and Mr. McCain has become narrower and narrower. Mr. Obama, at the same time, has given us a more inclusive, broader reach into the needs and aspirations of our people. He's crossing lines, ethnic lines, racial lines, generational lines. He's thinking about all villages have values, all towns have values, not just small towns have values.
All towns have values, not just small towns have values. We just have a minute left. Very briefly, does Colin Powell's endorsement make a difference?
Oh, yeah, it helps tremendously, I think, to confirm what had been going on in the last month of voters seeing Obama, having an easier time seeing Obama as president and commander-in-chief. Very quickly, it's also, Palin also provided Obama the bridge back to his 2004 speech. He now is able to basically say there are not pro-America and anti-America parts of the country. There's not red and blue. There's one America. That has been reintegrated as a, I think, powerful closing message after a very polarizing 8 years.
And how much does Powell counteract the gaffe by Joe Biden? And it was a horrible gaffe. You know, you've heard of Joe the plumber. John Stewart now calls Biden Joe the gaffer. He said last night, another Biden from Joe the gaffer, when Biden said that, you know, if Obama's elected president, he'll be tested by a foreign enemy in the first 6 months like John Kennedy was. Eek.
Joe Biden should be thanking his stars every night for Sarah Palin's interview with Katie Couric, because without that, we'd be talking about what a terrible vice presidential candidate he's been, because he has been. I mean, that remark was just inexplicable, really. You know, I think it provides, again, a talking point for McCain.
Actually, wait a second. You know what? We have that clip. So here it is. It's just it's 14 seconds of Joe Biden, and the audio is not great because he didn't say this in a big speech on the campaign trail. No? Oh, I thought we had it. I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, yeah, it's a gaffe, but, you know, I think we're beyond gaffes. I mean, look, presidential elections are usually big elections. I think they are fundamentally a referendum on the direction of the country. I think that is even more important than the personal assessments of the candidates. We've gone through a lot of twists and turns in this election, but as I said, I think we're ending up very much with the central dynamic that's been driving this all year. And one of the reasons why McCain's campaign has been so erratic is because they're constantly looking for ways to prevent this election from sort of reverting to the mean, from reverting where it wants to be, which is about a referendum on the direction of the country at a time when people are dissatisfied with the president. The biggest, the most important number for me in this race from the beginning has been what percentage of people who disapprove of President Bush are voting for John McCain. He needs to win an incredible 33% of them to win. By comparison, Al Gore and George H.W. Bush in 88 and 2000 won about 10% of the people who disapprove of the outgoing president. Mm-hmm. McCain now runs in the low 20s among those people discontented with Bush. That's, by historic standards, a great performance, but it is not enough. Obama winning two-thirds of those Bush disapprovers, that is just almost an insurmountable hill. I think McCain all year has been casting around for ways to kind of shift the focus, make it more of a personal comparison, the celebrity ads, you know, the attacks on experience picking talent. But in with a big help from this financial meltdown, the country's lens has widened again. Most voters are seeing this basically as a choice of divergent directions for the country. And in that environment, in this climate, it's almost impossible for the party in power to hold the White House.
All right. Well, maybe we'll see some red telephone 3 a.m. ads.
Maybe.
On the last weekend, like we did with Hillary Clinton in Texas, that were effective. But Ron Brownstein, political director for Atlantic Media, which includes Atlantic Magazine and National Journal. He also has a cover story in National Journal called The Hidden Story of the American Electorate, which gets into some of what we were just talking about. Ron, always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.